It's time for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, ready to run down the top news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture from this past week. On today's show, we'll catch you up on several agriculture-related bills introduced at the State House, including one that would protect Hoosier homestead farms from eminent domain. An Indiana farmer is helping guide the investments of soybean checkoff dollars at the national level. On the United Soybean Board Executive Committee, we'll hear from him. And Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin shares his upcoming Indiana farm forecast, as well as his outlook for spring planting season. Andy Eubank looks back on a mostly higher week for the grain markets coming up in just a few minutes. But let's begin at the Indiana State House, where property tax reform is among the top priorities for your state lawmakers here in 2025. Our C.J. Miller recently spoke with State Representative Kendall Culp, one of the few full-time farmers legislating in Indy, about his bill that would lower the property tax burden on farmland owners.
The last 3 years, agriculture's assessed value has gone up 63%. Now, no other taxing group has taken that kind of an increase.
And that's Representative Culp talking about House Bill 1192, which would ultimately lower property taxes for Indiana farmland owners by changing the way your county assessors calculate the value of farmland.
It's a Purdue formula that takes into account commodity prices, cash rents, input expenses, and interest rates. And so basically what I've done is change the interest rate. Currently, they use an interest rate of 8%, a capitalization rate. Mine would take it to 10%. What's important is you take the average of all of this, these input costs, the cash rents, and the grain prices over a six-year period, and you divide that by the interest rate. So if you're dividing by a larger number, your result is going to be a smaller number, which that is your assessed valuation.
Culp's bill offers an additional change to the calculation.
We're taking the past 6 years' history and we're dropping the high year and averaging the other five. While that's good that it smooths out the peaks and valleys in the assessment, it does not necessarily reflect the current conditions of the finances of agriculture. And so what I'm suggesting is we drop the two high years. So we would average the four out of the last six lowest years, divide that by the capitalization rate, that would give us the number. And so those two changes, I think, would make a substantial difference and would be more realistic and reflective of the current ag economy as it stands today.
A fiscal study by the state legislature says that farmland owners would pay $33.2 million less in 2027 if the bill becomes law. However, that same study says that farmland assessments could be reduced by an estimated $9.2 billion for that same year, and that could cause an increase in other tax rates.
While I understand we have to certainly provide revenue for local governments and schools, it has to be fair, and the burden of these increases cannot only be borne just by agriculture.
You can hear my full conversation with Representative Kendall Culp. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
All right, C.J., thanks. We're certainly watching those property tax bills. A couple of other bills we're watching here very closely at Hoosier Ag Today. House Bill 1127 from Allen County Representative Dave Heine, and its companion bill in the Senate, SB 254 from Boone County's Brian Buchanan. These bills would provide biofuel tax credits to fuel retailers.
Incentivizing those retailers to offer those higher blends and building demand for both corn and soybean.
That's Steve Howell with the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance talking about higher blends of ethanol or soy biodiesel. A study shows that if passed, this measure could bring an additional $117 million annually to Hoosier corn and soybean farmers. And it would bring great value to the state as well.
It'll add $104 million to Indiana's GDP and will save the consumers $11 million annually. And this is an investment of $10 million for the ethanol incentive, $5 million for the biodiesel incentive, total investment of $15 million. And we can show that return right back into Hoosier's pockets.
Howell joins us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast to discuss the bills and is joined by Aaron Kuhn, Regional Marketing Manager for POET. Kuhn explains what the demand could be for corn growers.
So if we were able to push those extra gallons through E15, hit the max cap of $10 million, that's 30 million gallons or another, essentially another 10 million bushels of new demand. just for this bill.
Jeremy Mullins, commercial manager of Louis Dreyfus Company in Claypool, also joins us on the podcast. He explains how the bill is beneficial to biofuel producers like them as well.
The closer we can ship our product to our final consumer being in Indiana versus loading it by rail and shipping it to the New York Harbor, the closer we ship it, that's less cost for us. And those cost savings do trickle down to the farmer as well.
Tune into the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts or download the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Just search for Hoosier Ag Today in your app store. Last week, we told you about the first case of highly pathogenic avian influenza in Indiana in nearly a year in Jay County. This week, cases number 2 and 3, also in Jay County. The second case involved a commercial egg production facility with over 350,000 hens. The third case was a flock size of over 18,000 turkeys. Again, this comes after the first last week. Over 20,000 turkeys were depopulated. You can read more on this at HoosierAgToday.com. More farm news on the way. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast coming up right now. Let's take a look at the markets. And for that, we welcome in Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. It was a back-and-forth week in the markets, but on Friday, a strong ending with everything higher. Those settlements coming up. We'll begin, though, with market analysis. I grabbed it in the middle of the trading session from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Markets are rebounding on Friday after a sell-off on Thursday. It has been a choppy and very volatile week, and mostly higher in the case of corn and soybeans. Brian, what do you make of the Friday rally?
Thank you for having me, Andy, and you summarized that quite well. It has been a volatile week. We're in the middle of January, and typically markets are rather quiet in the middle of the late January, but not this year. We've got a lot of moving pieces here. We've got uncertainty about weather conditions in South America. The corn is going through pollination in Argentina. This is the early planted corn, Andy, that was planted last fall. And it is not pollinating in the best circumstances. It's not a catastrophe. I don't want to say it's a catastrophe, but it's not pollinating in the best of circumstances. Having said that, there is some rain moving in this weekend and next week. So again, volatile, the word you used was spot on. So, but for the moment, the commodity funds, Andy, have gotten long corn. And we'll get an update this afternoon on how long they were earlier this week. But it certainly feels like they're in no hurry to get out of those long positions at the moment. We saw March corn this morning go up to the highest price it's been since, I believe, June 13th. That's a seven-month high in corn futures at about 484. So volatile is what is probably going to remain that way, too. Beans down 20 cents on Thursday, up 10 to 15 cents here on Friday as you and I speak.
Market analysis from Brian Basting, economist at Advanced Trading. The number there is 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, final numbers. New contract high in corn, March 484 and a quarter, ending the day up 9 3/4. May contract up an even dime at 493, and July goes to 494 and a quarter, up 8 1/4. 15 cents higher on the May beans, 1034. May 1044 and 3/4, up 13 1/4. And July up 12.5 cents, 1055 and a quarter. A penny and a quarter higher on the March and May wheat contracts. March 538 and 3/4, May 550 and 3/4. Meats were mixed. February live cattle came off the day's lows to finish on the plus side, up 15 cents, 196.75. April down 17 cents. February lean hogs down $1.17 at 81.12. I'm Andy Eubank with the Friday market review. Markets are closed Monday for the Martin Luther King holiday, which also happens to be Inauguration Day, of course. Much more still to come on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Attention farmers, a big part of the Keystone Cooperative Advantage is reinvesting in the business to better serve farmer members. To support this effort, they're partnering with Purple Wave Auction to sell over 150 pieces of quality equipment this January and February, including over 70 sprayers and spreaders with brands ranging from Case to John Deere and Rogator. And there's so much more selling in these auctions. Get registered today at purplewave.com.
little bit of nuisance precipitation to start the weekend, but the story is a bitter cold Arctic air. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. We haven't had cold air quite like this in a little while. Last winter was pretty doggone mild when you get right down to it, and we're seeing a little bit of Mother Nature's real side for January as we move through the next few days. Let's start with the precipitation that developed late yesterday overnight. System coming up from the southwest, and we had been quite mild yesterday. Had a lot of sloppiness out there. Snow melt, just pools of water in different places. Had a lot of clouds, too, as warm air comes over our cold, snow-covered surface. But what that means is, as we get the precipitation done here by midday and we move into the flash freeze side of things, yeah, we get pretty interesting because temperatures are going to be falling this afternoon in a large part of the Hoosier State, continuing to fall overnight and through most of the day tomorrow. Arctic air is on the way. Temperatures have been below zero in North Dakota for the last 12 hours or so and will not pop their head back up into positive territory until sometime Tuesday afternoon, or if not there, Wednesday midday. We're not looking at as sharply cold temperatures as North Dakota, but we are going to be seeing several rounds of below zero, and wind chills will be our main problem. All right, so we're ending up with a coating to an inch or so of slushy, wet accumulation of snow by midday today in the north. I think just rain and wet snowflakes in central and southern Indiana. The temperature is falling this afternoon, but clouds stay here. We likely see temperatures crash all day tomorrow, going below zero tomorrow night. I don't think we see much clearing tomorrow, maybe a little bit. The winds ramp up. I think we have dangerous wind chills overnight tomorrow night, right on through Monday. Monday is going to be probably stuck in the single digits, maybe even slightly below zero in northern parts of the state. We are then in the single digits for Tuesday and Wednesday with overnight lows below zero. Temperatures ease a little bit for Thursday into Friday, not by much, but a little bit. And then we get into the late week and we see a reinforcing shot of cold air coming down. Oh, we're probably going to have to deal with some lake effect as well Sunday into Monday, but we don't have any significant system snow until the following Monday, the 27th. That's when a little clipper system comes through the Great Lakes region, probably seeing some snow in northern Indiana, but not much farther south. We have another system toward midweek, so this is right around day 10, Wednesday the 29th, that can bring rain and wet snow back to the area. A lot of it rain and maybe even a few thunderstorms, so gear up for that as we get ready to flip the calendar into February. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
It's too good to be kept a secret. The Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter. Every weekday morning, it gives you the latest news that's important to Indiana agriculture, plus a review of the farm markets and a customized weather forecast that's just for Indiana. It's free. It's in your email box every morning. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your employees to sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today email newsletter at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and there are a lot of Indiana farms that have been in the same family for generations, many for more than 100 years and some for as long as 200 years. That's why State Representative Rob Green has introduced a bill that would further protect those families from having their farms stripped away from them through eminent domain.
Leave me alone. We've been farming for 150 years. I want to continue to farm. My kids want to continue to farm.
And that's State Representative Rob Green talking about the feedback that he's received from farmers and the reason he wrote House Bill 1265.
So 1265 deals with the Hoosier Homestead Farm Program. So it was a program that was developed to honor the families that had continuous operation and ownership of a farm for 100, 150, and 200 years. you know, I'd estimate there's maybe 3,500 to 4,000 farms that are still holding that designation.
Green says that one of those farms was threatened to be seized by local officials through eminent domain.
A couple years ago, a constituent reached out who had a centennial farm that had a potential eminent domain issue. Now, they were, in one of the truest senses, a farm that had kept the family together for all those generations, had built it up over time. So there was development pushing in, and there was an issue of eminent domain that came up. And the family was, frankly, shocked that there was zero consideration given to the profile of a farm like theirs, that it wasn't even a question.
Green says his bill offers additional protections for Indiana's farms with those Hoosier Homestead designations.
It gives these farms an opportunity to remonstrate against eminent domain should a local government, a local body, a utility come in for a fee simple taking of properties. And it really just gives them an opportunity to push back against that. These families have beaten the odds and really should, in my opinion, deserve the opportunity to continue to keep the farm together and carry on their legacy to future generations.
In fact, Representative Green says he wants to hear from you if you've been in this situation. We have his contact information for you at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, the United Soybean Board is off and running in 2025, continuing their pursuit of driving soybean demand through new uses and new products. Eric Pfeiffer has more.
Fort Wayne, Indiana farmer Don Weiss serves on the executive board for USB. He says your checkoff dollars are hard at work.
For every dollar invested over the past 5 years, we have seen a $12.30 turn back to the family farm.
Innovative investments by the United Soybean Board in recent years include getting soybean oil in the soles of Skechers shoes and in Goodyear tires. Weiss says in his time serving the checkoff in Indiana and at the national level, the investments in high oleic soybeans are easily one of the best.
Not only does it differentiate our soybean oil and gives us opportunity in new markets, new end users, but we're also seeing a lot of progress here quickly, including that high oleic soybean into the dairy rations. The reason for that is that we're seeing at the dairy level, you know, that higher milk fat concentration and yield.
Farmers continue to get premiums for their high oleic soybeans, and many Indiana farmers have been taking advantage of that already.
Indiana and Ohio were really the starting point of high oleic soybeans in the U.S. So we continue to be the leading marketplace for high oleic soybeans in the U.S. And the premiums have moved a little bit each year, Eric, but at the same time, a lot of value coming back to the farm level by that soybean checkoff dollar that's been invested into this program.
Hear my full interview with Weiss at HoosierAgToday.com. We discuss how he and other USB board members are dedicated to guiding soy checkoff investments across three strategic priorities: infrastructure and connectivity, health and nutrition, and innovation and technology to maximize value for soybean growers. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, a new study by the American Farm Bureau Federation shows a rise in the amount of U.S. farmland that's now being owned by those in foreign countries.
Foreign ownership of U.S. ag land increased by 1.6 million acres, reaching a total of 45.9 million acres, which represents 3.6% of total privately held ag land in the United States.
And that's Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau Federation. He says only a small portion of that farmland is owned by China and other adversarial nations.
Interestingly, land ownership by Chinese, Russian, and Iranian-based investors decreased by 36,000 acres or 9% to the smallest levels in a few years.
Munch says our neighbors to the north own a majority of foreign-owned farmland.
Canada leads overwhelmingly with ownership of U.S. ag land in terms of foreign owners holding 15.4 million acres or about a third of all foreign-owned ag land in the country. Following Canada, you have investors from Netherlands, Italy, the United Kingdom, and Germany, which have holdings ranging from 5.2 million acres down to 2.5 million acres. Collectively, those nations hold 62% of all foreign-owned ag land in the United States.
He says that many of those investments are tied to timber and renewable energy. But there are still concerns regarding foreign ownership of American farmland.
Generally, concerns about foreign ownership of U.S. farmland often center around national security and food security. Some worry that adversarial nations could use land acquisitions for purposes contrary to U.S. interests, like controlling critical resources. Others are concerned about converting farmland into non-ag uses, like renewable energy projects.
According to the survey, China owns 27% less U.S. farmland in 2023 than they did in 2021. Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. And the Boar's Head facility in Newcastle has been cited by USDA for unsanitary conditions that were found by health inspectors over a 5.5-year period. In a document released this past week by USDA, health inspectors say they found numerous violations, including walls and doors at the plant that had mold, dirt, and blood on them. And that inspection report was released the same day as a final report by USDA, which identified a Boar's Head plant in Jarrett, Virginia, as the source of last year's listeria outbreak that killed 10 people and caused 60 others to get sick. You can find the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. Coming up, you'll hear once again from Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin as he shares his long-term weather outlook for the spring, plus Andy Eubank reports from the Purdue Top Farmer Conference. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and this is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
So much of the innovation in agriculture takes place on the coast. The farmers are here.
That's exactly right.
The farmers are here, and they need to know the farmers. The producers will tell them what they will and will not use. And the closer you can be to those producers, and the better your product's going to be. So we want to do this. We want to look into a federal grant to help us build this infrastructure and leverage everything we have and just continue to build and grow more opportunity. And what this is really all about, on a very selfish level, is kids and opportunity. I have 4 children, and I've seen way too many of our best and brightest have to move away.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. Thanks again for joining us on this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week as we run down the top news and information from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, and it has been a busy week. We've told you about all the happenings in Indianapolis at the State House. It was also a busy week in Fort Wayne at the Fort Wayne Farm Show. I made my way there Tuesday and had a chat with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. He was there and gave his outlook on spring planting. Here's some of our conversation.
We just came out of an almost unprecedented fall. Now, when it comes to harvest, it was unprecedented with the speed that we did. But if you look at the 5-month precipitation combined to finish last year, so Dece, Nov, back into October, August, September, we have only done that kind of precipitation setup 7 other times going all the way back to 1895. So trying to see some patterns here and what happens after that. 4 out of those 7 years, we ended up with a very, very dry April and May. The other 3, all over the board. But I think right now, the way that we're setting this up, we've got a long tail to this dryness that we ended 2024 with. And I think that leads into a fairly friendly spring planting season. Is it going to be all roses and sunshine? Probably not. But friendly, I think, to get this crop in.
What kind of process do you go through to look for this type of thing this far out? I mean, here we are, early January, and you're trying to predict what things are going to be come planting time. Obviously, weather changes. You can't put it out day by day, but there is some science behind this, right?
Yes, I have a large rock suspended from a rope. Some of you know it as the old Indian weather rock, and I consult that quite a bit. But in all actuality, Eric, when you look at longer-term forecasts, it's about pattern recognition, trying to find a pattern. Just like in marketing, you try and find patterns on charts. For the technicals, we look back through and try and find patterns. Does that mean what happened in 1635 is going to happen again? No, absolutely not. But if you find patterns, we can get a little insight as to maybe what a season is going to unfold as, with its little curveballs here and there. But we feel fairly confident about the pattern that we're seeing right now.
And of course, that would be great news for farmers. We'll keep our fingers crossed there. Purdue held their top farmer conference last week, and there were presentations on the political landscape with the new Congress in D.C., AI, and new technology. But always lurking for farmers is the challenge of turning a profit. And as Andy Eubank reports, that's going to be difficult in 2025.
The prospects right now do not look very good.
That's Michael Langemeyer, director at the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, which hosts the conference each year. He says the Ag Economy Barometer says it all. For months, it has highlighted high input costs and low commodity prices.
We're living with the high input costs that we've had the last 3 years. It just seemed to stay up there, and so the break-even prices are substantially higher than what they were in 2021 and before that. And so, and along with that, we've got relatively low corn and soybean prices. And so it's a classic case where the earnings are negative, or the economic profit is negative, or the break-even prices is higher than the price. And that's probably going to be that's probably going to continue through at least 25, perhaps into 26.
Purdue's break-even price on high productivity soil in Indiana is $4.90.
Recently redid the budget, and that's much higher than the current corn price, and particularly higher than the fall futures prices for 2025. The soybeans is not any better. The break-even price is about $11.50, which of course is substantially above where current soybean prices are and where the projections are for next fall.
Langemeyer says farmers also had to manage through tight margins in the 2014 through 19 period. The 2024 and 25 period might be worse. So how do you manage through this time period?
First, try to preserve your working capital. Be very cautious in terms of spending that liquidity. We've improved our liquidity, particularly with the high incomes in 21 and 22. Just be very cautious what you spend that on. And that leads me to the second thing. Be very cautious in asset purchases. Farmers usually do that. When incomes are lower, they tend to not buy as much machinery, not build as many buildings, and not be quite as aggressive with their cash rent.
In other words, tighten up and buckle up. I'm Andy Eubank.
Thanks for the report, Andy. You did also speak with Michael about a new position for him when the two of you chatted at the conference a week ago.
Yes, that's right. He is now director at the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, succeeding Jim Mintert, and I discussed that with Michael.
What the work of the center does is nothing new to you. You've been a part of it, I think, since the beginning, or very near the beginning. So taking over really is probably going to be, I would assume, pretty seamless for you.
It should be. I mean, we're not going to change focus that much. I mean, we've been involved in undergraduate teaching. We've been involved in outreach and also research, and we'll continue to do those three missions. We recently hired a director of research for the Center for Commercial Agriculture, Chad Fichter, and he's going to focus on agriculture finance and technology. And so one of the things we're probably going to do a little differently is we're going to try to bump up our efforts with graduate students, particularly in the areas that he works in.
Well, we certainly congratulate Michael on his new position, and congratulations to Dr. Jim Mintert on his retirement. That does it for this weekend's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. You'd think in a half hour we'd be able to get through all of the news impacting Indiana and U.S. agriculture. No way. There's so much going on. Find it all at HoosierAgToday.com. We'll do this again next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.